But first, to Anna Henderson in Canberra. Anna is Chief Political Correspondent for SBS. Anna, welcome back. Where have you been?
Well, David, I have been away, haven't I? And I haven't had a chance to update you. I was very lucky to be able to travel to the United Nations General Assembly and then to head on to London and then controversially to Liverpool, where the Prime Minister addressed the Labour Party conference there. And then most recently, I was just in the room with the US President Donald Trump for that quite incredible 35-minute press conference slash, for some people, haranguing in the cabinet room of the White House in Washington, D.C.
What was it like to find yourself there?
It was extraordinary. I mean, the lead up to these things, when you're in the White House grounds, it's always frantic. You know, you're queuing up, you're being hustled through different parts of the bowels of the West Wing and shoved into a room. We're given very strict instructions about what we could and couldn't touch. And they said at one point, don't touch the principals, which means don't touch the actual people. But we were really crushed up against the backs of the chairs where the Australian delegation was sitting. So it was quite hard not to touch them in that environment. But largely it was, I think, a moment where Australia has just been filled with so much of the sort of anticipation of the relationship between Anthony Albanese and Donald Trump and what the president thinks about things that relate to Australia. And there's been so many column inches and months spent poring over what or what the president doesn't think. Absolutely. And then we did have, in some ways, more time than I expected to hear from the US president what at that particular moment he does think about those massive policy issues for the Australian government and the Australian people, of course.
And you were there for the exchange about Kevin Rudd?
I was actually standing directly behind him, yes.
And was it, as it seemed to me, a very good-humoured bit of banter?
Look, there was mirth in the room. There was laughter. There was a sense of kind of frivolity, but it was awkward as well. And I think where things started to get a little bit murky as to whether the president was joking was when he kind of directly said, I don't like you and I probably never will. And it did have a tinge of a sense of perhaps malice there. It was hard to read, but it did seem like at that point in time, perhaps he got a little bit more serious about what we know is a fairly thin-skinned approach that the US president can have to direct criticism of him. And yes, members of his own administration who are sitting right next to him in
beside
the room have said him, worse.
Beside him. What had the vice president called him at one stage?
I think
a Nazi, wasn't it?
J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, none of them held back in criticising Donald Trump in the past. But it is different to have a leader who appoints an ambassador who's in the room. I think there was a sense of wanting to be a bit pointed, but I don't think it was kind of, as it was interpreted by Susan Lee, for example, some kind of atrocious misstep from the Australian side, which should have led to, you know, Kevin Rudd being immediately put on a plane back to Australia. Though he is, incidentally, I'm told, in Canberra at the moment, but that's unrelated to his ambassadorship or its future.
But that anybody could think that that wouldn't seem simply bounce off the massive ego of Kevin Rudd. I mean, that's not going to hurt the man. That's just...
He didn't seem to be feeling any pressure. He was enjoying it.
Anna, you're back.
And look, we've got to cap this off. We've got to cap this off and say
we have.
That really, if Kevin Rudd was being criticised by the opposition for what everybody was touting as, you know, a kind of masterstroke of diplomacy of what happened in that room, which he was clearly quite substantially responsible for, it didn't really logically stack up that he would then get punished for it.
No. Hey, now that you're back, and it must be such a relief to be back in Canberra, now that you're back, have you been able to sort of observe how the opposition is going after investing months and months and months in the huge argument that Anthony Albanese was an inconspicuous, ineffectual figure. He couldn't get through anybody's doors. Nobody wanted to meet him. Nobody wanted to talk to him. And then you witnessed what happened. How's the opposition going? Did anybody think that maybe this might all kind of, come back in their faces?
I think you can almost hear the recalibration occurring in the building as that foreign policy platform, which is quite robust in terms of criticising the Prime Minister over his ability to engage with the United States, now has to sort of be put through the shredder, and the coalition has to work out how it kind of approaches these issues going forward in a completely different way. There is still a view within many in the coalition, though, that Donald Trump can change his position very quickly, and that, you know, his word is necessarily to be taken as a bond. Things can change quite dramatically. But I don't think there's much in terms of what happened in that room that you could suggest is ambiguous. Like, there was a very strong, I think Australia was described as Donald Trump's most sort of favoured friend. So the coalition now has to sort of work out how it's going to get back to basics with criticism of the government. And it's going to be far more on a domestic footing, looking at, yes, national security, but far more about, you know, what's happening for people at home and focusing on the economy at the moment in an attempt to try and gain back some ground. But there is a sense that the opposition is in a state of both flux and trying to really pick itself up after an incredibly difficult period of internal machinations.
I think it's unfortunate that you should have used the expression pick themselves up, just as I was about to ask about Barnaby Joyce. Look, I don't want to talk about him at any length tonight because so much has already been said, but could you just give us an update? Where is he party-wise at the moment?
Well, I was in Question Time today and Barnaby Joyce was sitting in the area of the floor of Question Time within the grouping of his Nationals colleagues. And he told reporters today that he still considers himself at this point in time within the Nationals. He's not going to move to become an independent while he considers his future, but at the same time, he won't be attending the party room meetings. So he's not, you know, suggesting at this point in time that he'll either abstain himself into the crossbench or that he's about to suddenly make a move into One Nation, as has been suggested. But at the same time, he's not actually engaging with the Nationals' kind of political process or the group decision-making that they do. And when he was asked about his position on emissions policy, which is one of the big reasons that he's had this huge falling out with David Littleproud and some other Nationals colleagues. He was asked about aspirations and targets. He said, if I was to say I have a target to punch you in the nose, but now I've just got an aspiration, would you feel more comfortable about it? And then he went on to say he's not a violent man and it was a metaphor. But if you get a sense of, you know, where Barnaby Joyce's head is at the moment and the way he's thinking about policy, he's certainly wanting to be very front and centre and pull focus from those Nationals colleagues, particularly David Littleproud, that he disagrees with so strongly. But what happens in the future, very unclear. Pauline Hanson took her name off the One Nation brand over the course of the last couple of days. Interesting.
What, it's no longer
Pauline Hanson's One Nation?
It's no longer FOM. Is it on? Mm. No.
On. It is on.
Yes.
Well, some say it is on. But look, let's see what happens from here. There are some within the Nationals who are extremely fond of Barnaby Joyce, see him as an elder statesman of the movement. There are some in the young Nationals who, you know, sort of have also been putting their hand forward to say, please come back. You're a part of us and we use you to campaign on and we need you to be there.
The youngsters like him.
Well, some do.
Yeah.
On Instagram, they certainly penned him a very fond farewell letter. And I think there is a sense that there's some hope of somehow bringing him back into the tent. But this has been a fairly long decoupling process. And I think there are many within the gallery who are not expecting Barnaby Joyce to contest the next election for the seat of New England anyway. So it's not ultimately that surprising to me that he's going to leave the lower house. But where he goes next, obviously, will be a matter of delicate negotiation.
Up somewhere. Anna, I blame you very much for this. I didn't intend to talk about Barnaby Joyce. I'm speaking to Anna Henderson, of course, SBS World News Chief Political Correspondent. Anna, the big thing this week is the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act. Is Anthony Albanese willing to spend any political capital to get this legislation through?
He is, because I think he sees the potential that if he can do a deal with the coalition that pleases particularly the business community, but also has the added value of increasing environmental protections at the same time that he thinks he will be able to work with some of those big businesses on speeding up the processes that could speed up Australia's economy. Now, everyone who is deeply involved in the environmental movement is up in arms about how this process is unfolding and what's likely to happen. And the Greens as well know that they're at the bargaining table, but very much down the list of people that the government wants to speak to at the moment. They're being consulted, and what I'm being told is there's definitely a show of fairness in the consultation, but the message that's quite clearly coming through to the Greens Party around the things that they wanted to see, including a climate trigger, which at this stage has been ruled out, and also in terms of native logging, they don't feel like the concessions the government is willing to make or the way that the Murray Watt as Environment Minister sort of approach to this process is unfolding is about courting them. They see this as very much either courting the coalition or in the process, potentially additional political capital. If Labor puts forward something that businesses like and the coalition rejects, then it will wedge them as well. So it does seem like there's a lot of political strategy at play here. And the Prime Minister does see value in it. But it's interesting that this negotiating point that's unfolding this week and including the Environment Minister unveiling the bill publicly on Thursday is all happening while Anthony Albanese is out of the country.
What does the opposition demand of this legislation? Native logging, I suppose, lots and lots of native logging. What else?
I think it's at this point a little unclear to me exactly where their red lines are. I think the main message that's coming from the opposition is they want to make sure that whatever is agreed to is turbocharging the approvals process to ensure that economically things are charging ahead, that the mining companies and the other businesses that are waiting on this have got certainty about their future. They do say that they want to see environmental protection in place, but a lot of the focus has been on ensuring from the coalition's point of view that whatever structure is put forward isn't going to focus on allowing, for example, a body and an individual elected in through a statutory process to have a lot of say over what happens in a way that can't be contradicted in the parliament or by the coalition or held to account. So there are those sort of tin tacks that we're going through at the moment. And there's a lot of cloak and dagger here, David, in terms of trying to work out what Labor's actually putting forward. They say they've put forward 70% of the bill in their negotiations. They seem to have made a very clear delineation there. But we haven't seen a lot of that detail. And there's sort of extracts that are being provided in briefings. A lot of information is just little piecemeal elements. So I think until we get to Thursday and Murray Watt does unfold the detail and we see the bill, I'm actually a little reticent to comment too deeply on what we're actually looking at here and what the parliament is going to vote on, because I don't think we have full visibility on it.
And we don't speculate on Late Night Live. Anna, thanks so much for joining the show. I've been speaking to Anna Henderson, SBS World News Chief Political Correspondent, about the latest in Canberra.